Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Good evening and welcome to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. Well, we have some wonderful guests for you that you're going to be listening to in a few minutes. But before I do that, you know that I always, those of you who are used to listening to me, I always go through my housekeeping chores. And then I introduce my guests. So I just want to remind you that you are listening to blogtalkradio.com / S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Thomas, H as in Harry, and the number 2. And I say that specifically because that will get you to the catalog of almost 50 episodes that we've done now since we started last year, 2020, in March. And you can then review some of those, go to YouTube and see the people who have been talking on the radio then for 1 hour and enjoy yourself. And you can go back and forth as many times as you want to. And then I want to give you the number that you can call tonight and anytime to call in to welcome the guests, to ask them questions, to say hello. And that's 516-453-6063. Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser is really here to remind people about the arts and their support of it, for the fact that all of our lives have been affected by it, and for us not to forget that, for us not to have amnesia about what the arts have contributed to our lives. And so with that said, I'd like to, and thank you so much. Those people who are coming, the board is loading up. Thank you very much, and I look forward to your questions a little bit later. I'd like to welcome some members of the board of Friends of Music of Bethlehem. And let me tell you that this, belonging to this organization for almost 7 years, I'm very proud to be a member of this, being classically trained as a vocalist when I was very young at Carnegie. I had a great deal of respect for classical music and the foundation of it. And I believe whatever instrument it is, whether it is vocal or an actual physical instrument, that if you can play the classical music, you can play anything. So that's the foundation of it. And the enthusiasm and the determination and the passion that the people on this board have to what they have is a love of sustaining classical music and making sure that we really carry on that legacy to the younger generation, and I really respect them for that. That being said, I want to introduce you to two of the members. One of them is the president, the current president of the Board of Friends of Music, and the other is a longtime member who I think is an expert about everything that we do. We rely upon her a great deal in information and all her memories. So let me go first to our president, which is Philip Whalen. Philip came to us, I think, in 2017, and he was the executive secretary, and he brought a lot of organization to the board, I believe. We kind of started getting toward the 21st century when he came on board. I believe I was president at the time there, and he was very, very helpful, Philip was, to keep me on the straight and narrow. And that was a very important thing, I believe. I need to make sure that people always keep me focused, because I have a tendency to go and be all over the place. Those are the people who really know me. But it really is a passion of mine. And then we have Sarah George. And Sarah, I believe, who is a longtime member of the board of Friends of Music, is probably the stoic person that I go to. You know, she's always there. She is.
I didn't know that.
She's got a giggle. You know, she's always there. She has a great memory about what it is that we have done, what works, what doesn't work, but also being open to a lot of things, as Philip is. Philip has really brought us into the 21st century a great deal. And I'm very proud of that, because that was a journey. We had a journey to do that. So I will introduce you to these people. You will find that we will get into conversation about Friends of Music. And so interrupt us with a question, because we may go on and on and on about what it is that we care about. But hello, Sarah. Hello, Philip. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Lenny Godfrey Straight.
Thank you so much, Lenny.
You're welcome.
Hello, Lenny. Grateful to be here. Thanks.
Yes. Now, we're talking about an organization that is based in Bethlehem for the most part. There are many Friends of Music all over the country, but we service the Lehigh Valley. And one of the things that I really admire about the organization that we do is the grant issue about it, and the concert, the annual concert, the youth concert that we have. But before we get to that, I want to introduce you all to the audience so that they can understand who sits on a board like that. And I'm going to start with Sarah, because I can expand on Sarah, but when I get to Philip, I'm going to have to explore. So,
uh-oh.
Yes. But let me just ask her, Sarah, you were oh so generous with your memory of having had music in a part of your life very early on, and the part that your parents played in it. And in it, you recalled that you saw a broadcast, and I want to say, is it Amal?
Yeah, Amal and the Night Visitors, which
yes,
is that Carl Minotti. Through children's opera about a little boy who's lame, and his mother, she's a widow, and they're very, very, very poor. And they have three night visitors one night. The three wise men come calling for a place to stay, and they can't believe it at first that they've come, but at any rate, there is a miracle that happens that night, and the little boy is able to walk suddenly. So he decides that he wants to offer his crutch to the Christ child, and so he goes on the journey with the wise men. And that was broadcast originally in the late 50s, which gives you an idea how old I am. older than dirt. And but it was very influential in my life. And I had my grandfather's cane I found in the house, and I used to reenact Alma and the Night Visitors by hobbling around and pretending that I was lame. I know, this is what a lame story, but that's what I loved. And you know, it's great for kids, because it really is set up to be a kids' opera and enjoyable for people of all ages. So that's one of my earliest memories.
That sounds wonderful. I'm not going to even ask you how old you were, but
I gave myself away.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing about it, Sarah, is that it sounds like it would be something really beautiful that for us to be able to present in today's audience to young children.
Oh, it would be terrific, because it has, not only is it there's enough action, you know, that a kid doesn't need to be able to even follow all the dialogue and so forth, but you can you know what's happening. But it's very tuneful. I won't share my singing voice with you, but I have been known to be able to sing parts of it, to my family's chagrin, because that is as soon as it's Advent, then out comes the Alma and the Night Visitors CD. And dancing around and singing, but there's dance in it, and obviously singing, and it's a terrific, and it's just a one scene kind of a play. So it doesn't require a lot of scenery. It's very minimalistic, and it would be terrific because it brings in all sorts of people's talents and ages and so forth. It would be great to do.
Oh, it sounds just wonderful. It just really does sound wonderful. Now, so with that said, I'm going to go over to Philip. Now, Philip, you tell me where you are now. I know the area very well because a relative of mine used to live near the Dover area. So tell me about your first moment. What, as we just revisited Sarah's, because, I mean, it was so vivid, Sarah, that I could see you just around with your grandfather's cane doing all that. What is a moment in your life, Philip, that spawned you to go toward music?
Mm-hmm. Real quick, with Amal and the Night
Not
Visit,
real
sorry.
Quick. You know, let me just say, don't say it really quickly. Say it visually so we can see.
I'll
can
say it very slowly and very articulated. A lot of the, as you were saying, I work in Dover at the public school district, and a lot of the music teachers do look at Amal and the Night Visitor for an introduction to the students into opera and into classical music because of how, prolific it is as a show. Even being from, the 50s, it still, is such a used thing nowadays because of how accessible it is for kids. So I think that's really great that, you can see that it had that effect for Sarah as the same it does for really kids today. And I think that's absolutely wonderful. Personally, for me, my experience was a little more, I would like to say, involved, where I remember I really got into music as in elementary school because there was like a special kind of like event that was going on where a few students had to audition and they were invited then to perform at a nursing home. And I remember, I was practicing because I thought it would be so wonderful to be able to be selected for this, select ensemble to go and practice. And I remember I felt absolutely terrified when I had to play, I think it was like a scale and maybe, a part of a song, a Christmas tune. And I was for sure thinking after, I was like, I don't have it. That was awful. I did terrible. And lo and behold, I was, selected as one of two trumpet players to go to the nursing home and play for the residents there. And honestly, that's like one of my earliest recollections of just feeling so proud to have been doing what I was doing in music. And
how
it's really just, carried on from there.
How long had you been practicing the trumpet when that happened?
That was in fifth grade. So only fourth grade I played trumpet in at the school, and then fifth grade winter time. So, a year and a little bit would be that answer.
Oh, yeah, just a little bit. Now, Sarah, when you heard this, had you been studying any kind of music yet?
Oh, my heavens. No, I was like 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, we're talking really, really, really early memory mm-hmm. of music
okay.
that really enchanted me and so forth. Now, I my parents played duets. My father was a violinist. My mother was a pianist. And they mm-hmm. played duets together a lot. And I would, how kids like to play around and imitate what their parents do. I had an old purple plastic ukulele, and a green ruler, and I would pretend that I was playing the violin.
That's wonderful. I love that.
Yeah, I was a trip. But then my mother had, I went scrambling through my mother's music. So now I'm like age 5 or 6, and I found my mother's old copy of Teaching Little Fingers to Play, the old John Thompson series.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea whether John Thompson is still used anymore in piano study, but at any rate, I found it, and it's been, some of the pictures have been colored, and it was pretty raggedy and so forth. But I but there were illustrations, so I could figure out where middle C was on the piano.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I used that to teach myself to start to play, and I went through that book, you know, through time and memorized, did everything so long that, of course, everything was memorized by that time.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't have the John Thompson first grade book, but she had the second grade book, and so I started going through that and teaching myself to play that. And then I just started messing around with some other music, and little by little teaching myself how to play and would memorize pieces and so forth. But I didn't study piano formally until I was a teenager. But in the meantime, I had started studying violin as maybe age 9, 8 or 9. And
mm-hmm.
So that was really, I always think of the violin as really my first love. But piano was easy because it was so visual. And of course, you know, when you hit when you play an A on a piano, it's always A, assuming that your piano is in tune. But you know, on the violin, well, of course, there's the open A string on the violin, and hopefully, if you're in tune, that A is an A. But anything else, you know, you have to use your ears to know where do I put my first finger down for the B, and where do I put my next finger down for, you know, the C and so forth, or C sharp. And so there's a lot of ear training that goes on.
Definitely.
while you're learning to play. And but it was through piano that I really started understanding something about music theory and you know, really understood scales and that sort of thing, how music really is put together. But violin, I guess, is still my first love.
It's still but the formal violin, not the with the ruler, regular violin.
Right. No, the real violin. The real violin. We lived in Maryland, and my parents are Baltimorean. So when I had outgrown the little kind of a three-quarter violin or a half-size violin, and it was time for me to get a full-size violin. My parents went down to the Peabody, or near the Peabody Institute in Baltimore, and there was, you know, as you can imagine, music shops around the conservatory, and
mm-hmm.
We went in there, and my father helped me select a violin, and then he played it to make sure, I was too shy, sort of like Philip talking about a little bit of stage fright. I wasn't about to play violin in front of a stranger. But my father played it and declared, yes, this is a good violin. So, and that's the one I still have, although now my father recently passed at 103, and I now have his violin.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess and my son started violin when he was, kindergartner in Suzuki. And so...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So my son represents, I think, the fifth or sixth generation of violinists
wow.
in the family.
That's
something
fabulous.
Like that. I'm not sure.
That's and I'm going to get to the series of other instruments that you have taught yourself to play. I'm going to get
some
back
better
to
than others.
Yes, but I mean that, and then how I met another side, another corporate side of you, which is interesting, and how that. It twirls in for me when my concept of you as a person of music and how you use your sensitivity in that. But before I get to that, I'm going to go back over to Philip. So Philip, all right, you're in the fifth grade. You've played in now into the senior citizen home. Okay. Where do you go from there? Did you start to study formally? Did you still stay in school? What happened?
You know, it's kind of interesting because I feel like, you know, with Sarah, she, you know, found a love and she, you know, really stuck with it for so long. I love the fact that, you know, that she talks about her generational, you know, giving of her violin love to her children from her parents. And kind of passing down. For me, my parents really are not musical at all when it comes to classical music. You know, I used to sit in my dad's car and I would listen to him, croon at, you know, that old, you know, 60s and 50s, and he would always ask me, like, okay, I'll give you a quarter if you can figure out who's singing this one. And so, you know, it really, any generational, you know, love I had came from that. And then as I was saying, you know, from when I started in instrumental music at school. But I never had, like, one strict love. You know, I played trumpet up until middle school. I switched to the French horn, or the horn, as us French horn players call it. And then from there I switched to tuba, to organ in college. So really, like, I kept kind of, you know, I wanted more and more. You know, I couldn't get enough of just one thing. I wanted to kind of have a little bit of everything. And so,
well,
you know, by the time,
that's the terrific,
like,
thing about music, isn't it? That mm-hmm. regardless mm-hmm. of age, there's so much more to discover all the time, you know, and it doesn't need
Definitely.
To be something that we did as kids. Oh, yeah, you know, I played whatever in elementary school, or I may played whatever until, you know, 10th grade, and then I gave it up. Or you know, when I went to college, I gave that up. And it's something that continues with you as for a lifetime in discovery as an adult. And I'd never played any, like, brass instruments or anything like that until, well, as an adult, I guess in my 40s, I'm trying to think. I guess it was in my 40s.
Keep giving
and
those numbers out.
Yeah, I know. I told you I'm older than dirt, Philip. So I thought, you know what, I've never played a brass instrument. I've never played, so that actually, I took up the horn also originally, as my first foray into a band instrument. You know, there was the band,
very nice.
And there was orchestra. And, you know,
yeah.
And band was big.
Yeah.
Band was cool. Orchestra was, I guess we were the geeks, or I think, like, the super geeks,
was,
if there was such a term back then. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was the geeky.
So
one,
I tried horn. And mm-hmm. and loved that. You know, what's really cool about, you know, like the horn, or and then I went into trumpet and trombone now, is that, you know, that feeling, that vibration that you feel. And, of course, you feel vibration with violin and obviously with singing and so forth. But mm-hmm. I don't know, there's a closeness that it is, becomes like it's part of your body that is, that, you know, the whole breath control thing, but it's the vibration with your lips and your chest, to me is so exciting. And I have to tell you,
I love the way
I was
talk
never
about it, yeah.
a great lover of jazz, but with trumpet, I decided after a while, I said, you know what, I'm going to try some jazz pieces and see what that's like. And like, whoa, that opened up a whole nother avenue that, as I used, as to say, I used to go turn my head. Oh, jazz, really? And I think because I still don't understand it. But in trying to play it, I had a new
Hard.
Appreciation.
Yeah.
You
I,
know,
I love that.
Go on, go, Phyllis.
Sorry,
go.
I was going to say, I love that, you know, I'm learning so much about you, but also that, you know, you did bring up that, you know, it is such a timeless and ageless, you know, endeavor. You know, there's a running joke in, you know, music education that it's so hard to get a job because, you know, unlike sports where eventually, yes, your body kind of, you know, at like in dance, for instance, and like at the age, you know, late in your late 30s, you know, your body can't necessarily hold up to the artisticness that you're wanting. But with music, you know, it's endless.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the things that you
right.
you get from when you're a kid, you know, if you know, my goal as an educator is if I am able to hook, you know, one of my students on music at a young age, you know, I know that they'll be able to, you know, take it with them all the way through adulthood. And as your parents did, Sarah, pass it on to, you know, your kids, and then pass
mm-hmm.
it on to their kids, and it builds from there,
mm-hmm.
and really it creates, you know, generations of appreciation and expression, and it's
right.
That's
you know, and
that's
how
and that's
so
really
important for
do.
The schools, you know, like you're doing, Philip, and being able to and encourage that spirit in children. And when I was in school, we the I guess the school district had some grant money. I'm not sure how this came about, but we were able to attend periodically. The Baltimore Symphony Orchestra would come up. I lived in Frederick, Maryland growing up, which is central Maryland. It's about 45, 50 miles west of Baltimore and northwest of Washington. And the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra used to come up to Frederick, I think like four times a year. And, of course, they had a series in the evening for people that subscribed, but during the day, they'd have school kids were able to come and listen. So I think in the Lehigh Valley, I think that we're blessed that maybe pre-COVID and hopefully post-COVID, that money has been made available for children to be able to attend concerts or ensembles, either at the Allentown Symphony or other groups that can come in, the mm-hmm. Sartori people, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you know, but mm-hmm. but certainly. To be able to hear a live performance is just makes all the difference in the world, don't you
all
think?
All the difference. Certainly.
Well,
I
think what's interesting about the two of you, and you know, as I sit here and I'm smiling because you know we're almost finished with the first half hour, and I told you how fast they go. That the discovery that you all have found for yourselves, but also the audience can hear the enthusiasm that people on the board of this organization have for the music. Now, you talk about music, and of course, you know, that is my passion, but I talk about the arts in general. I think that throughout the arts, you can achieve and have a passion for anything at any age. You can start visual art, you can become a visual artist, whether you are 13 or whether you are 73. Or older, you know. You know, that development, that love of it, the freedom that it gives you, there's no age requirement, and that's what's important about it. And that's what's important about it when we approach the young people, that we like to come in to perpetually keep on elongating our legacy in the arts, especially in this particular subject is music. It's so important to know that even if you have someone there and they've been there for a while, everyone started with the excitement and passion that you have yourself. And I think the conversations that you're having now with, and as I interject, you know, I try not to get in too much of it because I really want you all to have that great discovery. It shows the excitement that exists in our board, in our organization about the music. And so to continue with that, so I really want, you know, Philip, you talked about, you know, not being able to have a direct legacy to connect with, but everybody connects with the arts in a different way. You know, not everyone has that generational legacy. Some people have it so that it started with someone not even in their family at all, someone that they admired. As long as what's wonderful about it is that, look, we wind up in the same place. The journey is different. But the destination is the same. You know?
And what I find so interesting about, if you will, the Friends of Music board, you know, we're made up of members who, yes, you know, there's a few of us who are music educators. There are a few of us who are, you know, current performers and current, you know, doers of music. But we also have, you know, so many members who are just, you know, when you first look at them, you're like, you know, why are you here on a board for classical music? You know, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. And it really is. It's just because they have that passion, you know, and just because they're not, you know, outwardly doing it, or just because they're not, you know, visibly, you know, a music doer, you know, they still have that passion. And I think that's great that our board is made up of, you know, people from all different, you know, background and experiences in that. You know, when we used to do, if you will, in college, we used to have, you know, go to band competitions and things like that, and we get to see other colleges and places and universities perform. And always, you know, I have to say some of the best, you know, performers and some of the best sounding, you know, college bands were the ones that were made up of people from all, like all different majors, science majors and history majors, mm-hmm. education and music. And, you know, it's really that passion that I think is what really holds it all together.
It's what keeps the arts alive. You know,
one
does not have to be actively in the arts every single day as for it to be your livelihood, for you to be passionate about it, for you to be a patron of it, and for you to be a part of it,
yeah.
to be able to participate in it. I mean, that's what's very, very interesting. And that's the point that I make. Now I'm going to make this point and flip it back over to Sarah, because Sarah, what occupation did you just retire from?
I was involved in developing new services and raising funds and grant writing for a Head Start organization, the largest one, one of the largest ones in the country that's
mm-hmm.
headquartered
mm-hmm.
right there in Allentown.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, it was related to kids and education, which is, again, really those things are all important to me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not directly related to the arts, per se.
Well, not necessarily to the arts, but I believe that, you know, everything is intertwined here. So some of the sensitivity that I think that the arts allows you to develop when you are a person of musical talent, if you are a person of visual arts, there are sensitivities that come alive for some of us. And I observed you doing what you did. You were excellent at it. My husband and I visited the establishment, and your knowledge of it, your caring of it, the passion about each and every person that you were servicing. It is a business of service. And as is the arts, we're servicing
right.
people, you know.
Right, right, right.
There is, you know, a connection. It may not be one that is so visual that you can say, oh, yeah, well, I did this and that gave me that. But also the discipline of how you learned all those instruments, and I'm getting to that in a minute, you applied to a business of learning all of the different facets of it. And that's what I'm saying, that our society is populated with people who have such a rich background in the arts, but then come to another field and then populate that field with those gifts that you got from the arts. But now I'll say that. I didn't want to dwell on that too much, but I did want to make that connection. But I want to go back. How many instruments did you teach yourself now, Sarah? How many instruments?
Well, now French horn I took formally. I mean, I actually had a teacher. and I had originally a teacher with trumpet and trombone. But otherwise it's piano, violin, cello. I've done entirely on my own. Trumpet, trombone, French horn, dulcimer, and guitar. And as I say, they all mountain guitar or mountain dulcimer. They're, you know, to varying degrees of skill, shall we say.
Each time, you can tell by the fact that you have such variety. There's a large element of curiosity in your background. What drew you to all of these instruments? Now, Philip, be aware that your question's coming very very quickly in a minute, so don't relax. Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, as I said, originally some of them, because I had been, you know, orchestra, I'd been, you know, string instruments, and always kind of looked at the kids playing the so-called band instruments, the trumpets and French horns and so forth. And I'd like to put on, before I'd go to school in the morning, I might be, one of my chores was to water the plants. And we had one of these old big copper pots with the water, and I would turn on some music. And let's say it was, like bagpipers. in a completely different year. But I would sit there with my little copper pot and pretend that I was playing a bagpipe. And and kind of, you know, kind of blowing through the spout and pretending that I, well, anyway,
a little harder to
it's weird.
Definitely.
Okay, you'd have to remember, I was a kid. I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah. This is so interesting. I shall never look at you the same way again after these conversations.
I love this. I need to hear more of these stories.
Well, yours are coming up. Don't you worry. You got a story to tell in a minute. Go ahead. Go finish, Sarah.
It was just, you know, so I had a fascination with certain band instruments, and I thought, well, you know, trumpet always gets to play like soprano pieces. Trumpet gets to play, you know, the main storyline of the music, and you know, sort of like violin. And so trombone is so physical because you're constantly moving around, so there was just a fascination with the instruments themselves, the way they looked, the way they seemed to be played. Cello I liked because it's, you know, it's big, and as my own voice has gotten lower through the years. Happens to all of us, to some of us at least. I find that I like the lower instruments, like the cello and the trombone, because they sound more like my voice these days, as opposed to the trumpet and the violin, which are much higher, and you know, it's just not my voice anymore. That's maybe I'm changing who I am and my personality, or you know, something as displayed by the instruments. But someday. But I've never done a reed instrument, so I would like to someday learn oboe and bassoon. And again, that's because I just love the way they sound.
Nice.
And again, I'll go back to Alma and the Night Visitors, but I'm pretty sure there's an oboe in there that just like, oh, that is so cool. And to be able to play that.
It's very interesting.
So someday, I'm not dead yet, so someday.
Yeah, I hear you. It's so interesting how you're right. You know, I love the alto sax. I mean, that's just, but that's because it's closer to the bottom part of my voice than it is to, you know, the higher part of my voice, which is like a tenor sax or going on toward the violin, kind of those things. But where you sit, you can relate to certain instruments and close your eyes and just go right into, you know, right into them. They envelop you. That's a whole nother thing and a whole singer thing that happens. But now, Philip, I have a question.
Hello.
All right. You attended Moravian College, Moravian University.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What was your inspiration to do that? And how has it affected where you are now?
In high school, you know, I really got into instrumental music and you know, playing at the time I was playing tuba, and I was probably one of the higher chaired tubas, if not first chair. I think there was one other person who you know, I would compete against for that top chair spot. And, you know, my band director really had great influence on me. You know, as Sarah had her parents, I felt, you know, a lot of my music teachers really, really played an influential role. And so in looking for you know, colleges for music education, because education is really a place that I like to be. I like working with children. I like seeing the fire that kind of sparks when a child, you know, gets it, or when you know, they get that moment of inspiration as well. And so looking around at different colleges, I'm from a slightly newer generation where, you know, we were able to look online and kind of like filter out different colleges for different things. And it actually turned out that one of the reasons Moravian came up is because it actually had both a music education department as well as a graphic design department, which I was also considering at the time. And so it just kind of, it was kind of me, you know, placing my eggs in multiple baskets of saying, well, if I go to Moravian College and I don't want to do music anymore, I can always switch to doing art. Even with instruments, I've always been maybe I can try this now. Oh, maybe I can try this now. Oh, this piece of instrument looks good.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, you know, definitely a choice that I said, okay, well, this is the place I want to go. Fell in love real, you know, immediately with the group of people, with the teachers, with the atmosphere. Bethlehem has such a rich musical scene, and that's art scene in general. You know, there's so many different art organizations in both classical music, in you know, street art, in dance, in all these different places. And it really, you know, I think that's what makes Bethlehem and the, you know, Greater Lehigh Valley just such a great place to really have an organization that helps support, you know, the youth in finding, you know, that spark of joy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, so important that the school music programs be supported, because that concerns me, as mm-hmm. budgets are tight and so forth. I understand mm-hmm. that. And of course, mm-hmm. COVID is the curveball that nobody anticipated. But, you know, that we can't let the arts be let go because
exactly.
of budgets.
Yep.
I mean, we've got to have the money for those
mm-hmm.
things, for whether it's the plastic arts or dance or instrumental music or what have you. I mean, choir and, you know, and choruses and so forth. That you're right, Philip, that Bethlehem really is rich in that, and that the Moravian background, I guess, you know, helps support that, you know, in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking 250 years or so of that kind of a background.
275 plus, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
well, there you go.
You know,
I mean, it's just so important.
I think it's not only just the Moravian. As I had the opportunity to talk about this, you know, Lehigh Valley is known as the Genius Belt, and it is a place where the arts was celebrated. Really, you talk about in the 30s and 40s. This is where people built their homes. They came here. They were artists, and then they would take their work and take it back to New York City. Put it in the movies and everything else. So there was always, it was the birth of, there was birth of artistry in this area. And I think it's one of the things that I'd like to make sure that continues, that we realize that we are in a fertile place here, that there is room for people to enjoy all kinds of participation in the arts, whether they physically do it, whether they are patrons of the arts, whether they participate in it or attend the concerts. It's very important. I have to stop right now because we only have about 15 minutes left, and I told you how quickly this goes. And I want to be able to say we've got people online that have called that, you know, are listed now, and I want to tell them, again, you've called in, and it's 516-453-6063, but if you have a question, you have to press 1. Because we are now entering into the last 15 minutes. And as I ask them, as we go into talking a little bit more about the board and how exciting we all are to be a part of this and welcoming, and hopefully we've got people who are interested in being a part of our board. Because whether you are, you know, have been in music all your life, or you just enjoyed music, or you just want, this interests you and you want to support the arts and you want to support music, we welcome the opportunity to sit down and talk to us and go visit our website, which is, Philip, say it for me.
No worries. The website is friends-of-music.org. And it'll take you right to our homepage where you can really explore, you know, all the different programs right on the homepage, actually, to get a quick view of that. But then you can explore the history. You can see, you know, all the past winners of our young artist competition. You can see past grant recipients as well, and see even pictures of, you know, of what those students are doing with those grants. So again, that's friends-of-music.org. Yeah.
Yes. And Sarah, talk a little bit about the youthful concert that we put on every outstanding youth concert that we put on annually.
That's a great. Philip has just mentioned the outstanding young artist competition that we hold in February. We will be accepting audition tapes, if you will, that you upload. And our idea is to recognize student performers in various instruments or vocally. And then in April of this year, we'll be holding a live, well, we hope it'll be live at the Moravian Old Chapel. And if we can't do it live because of COVID restrictions, then we're going to do a live stream that people will be able to tune into. But it's our opportunity to recognize young people, and this is, you know, grade school through 12th grade and maybe first year of college at this point, who are making great strides, and we expect to be, you know, they're already stars in their chosen instrument, and we've been doing this, gee whiz, I don't know how long, probably 40 years,
well,
a very long time.
We've probably been, around yeah. there, yeah.
Yeah, I think the competition, yes, but the organization has been around since.
Yeah, the organization is approaching 100 years. I think we go back to the 1920s.
Yeah, 1926.
Actually looking at the website because that's what I do, and I'm seeing we actually have the history of all those winners all the way back to 1963, you know, with Carol Gress Bauer for voice. Like I said, it's really interesting to see that history, but also as you were mentioning about the, you know, the last 2 years because of COVID, we had to do, you know, a virtual recital.
Yes.
And honestly, it's actually been quite a pleasure. You know, of course we want to be able to listen to live music, see them, but it's actually been, you know, quite a pleasure to kind of, you know, take that moment of these kids and be able to really, you know, have a physical thing that we can say, look what these kids can do. You know, we can show that off. We, it's actually on our website, you know, at the bottom of our homepage, the last year's recital. And I think it's just really beautiful to have a physical, you know, item of that as well. So.
Right. And we certainly, you know, we encourage students of, you know, there is certainly not non-discrimination of any sort. It's just a matter of how well do you play. And the auditions are judged by, I'll say, professionals, teachers and people who really know what to listen for and watch for. And it's a way of encouraging them further in their study, as well as recognizing outstanding achievement at this point in their lives.
I think it's, you know, the purpose of my really wanting everyone to hear your voices, the enthusiasm of your voices about it, and to experience what your journey, to find out what the members of the board of Friends of Music is about. Well, I'm here and I'm out doing all this stuff that I do, but the other board members are not as visible. And so it's really been wonderful to make these journeys, make the connection and the journeys and the stories that people have and when they listen to all of your stories and how they can come in contact with you and know that they're going to have fun. It's not only just sustaining the arts, it's also having fun being able to do that, knowing that you're giving back to a community, that you're sustaining a community, sustaining an art form that you can look back and be proud of to say, you know, I had a little bit a part of that. And that's more important than anything else. And so I really am so glad that you all decided to share your stories so the people, the Friends of Music becomes a more humane and a human kind of contact for people and a fun kind of place for people to come in and want to be a part of it. And yes, we do meet. We do a lot for the ability to be able to have that annual competition, to we do give grants to schools, and that's relatively new. I know that started when I kind of got in. The idea was that we should support some the schools and some children who may not be as financially secure as others, and so to be able to contribute to their being able to have access to classical instruments, to the idea of things, to appeal to their teachers to find out what it is that they want to achieve for a semester and then try to help them do that. That is a great deal. That gives us a great deal of pleasure. And I also want to, as I always did when I was president, and Philip does it all the time, to thank all those people who may be listening, who are not listening tonight, to say thank you for your constant support of this organization.
Yes, thank you.
You know, really thank you so much, because it means so much, the what you give to us, and then we try to distribute it to the children. They will have experiences that they will remember for the rest of their lives. And that's what's important. If that visual image can stay in your mind when you write the check, understand that what you are giving is experiences that children will never forget. You know, anonymously, they won't know who you are, but you'll know in your heart that you helped them. So I thank you for that.
I think music and dance and the arts in general make this lasting impression on children. I just want to do a little shout out to a music teacher that I had for a couple of years. The other thing about a music teacher in school is that you usually have them, you know, several years in a row.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you have the same music teacher all through elementary school, or the same band director or whatever through middle and high school and so forth. But somebody that you have not just 1 year of contact, but usually multiple years of contact. But the person who really made a huge difference in my life was a woman named Gwendolyn Hansen, long passed now, but she was a Mills Brothers sister. And those who know the Mills Brothers, I'm referring to, she was really something. She had a coloratura voice that just magnificent. And I just found her spellbinding. And I and she was my music teacher. You know, back in the day when the music teachers would travel around the different schools, maybe they still do this, and to your classroom, you didn't go to some special place. They actually came into your classroom, and sometimes they'd carry little instruments with them that they'd hand out, and other times, you know, just teach us a new song and so forth. But she was an inspiration to me. And that's why recently we have added another program. We've mentioned the Outstanding Artists Competition. We've mentioned school grants for music programs. But our third and most recent one is teacher recognition. That's music teacher recognition. Because those teachers are really important, whether they're the public school teacher or whether they're the private teacher. But we want to recognize the influence that those teachers have in changing the lives of children every single day. So I'm hoping that we have lots of entries this year to choose between and make it hard on us. But I know there are outstanding people out there, so make it hard for us.
And Sarah, I love that, because it's not even just the influence of them, but honestly, you know, the love and support that they really give to each of their students. You know, one of my favorite things, you know, about doing all these different programs is that, you know, they all have some correlation to that child's, you know, music teacher. You know, whether it's the Outstanding Young Artist Competition, you know, it's those teachers who say, I bet you could do this. You should try out for this. I'm going to support you. I'm going to, you know, make sure that all your material is in. I'm going to record you. School grants, same thing. It's the teachers who are, you know, say, I have this great idea for my kids that'll make them love what we do. And so, you know, to be part of getting to give those teachers the resources they need is just an experience on the board, you know, for all our board members, I think, that it's just, as Lenny would put it, fun, but, you know, also it just makes you feel absolutely wonderful to know that you're helping out those teachers. And in return, as you said, you know, we did create that Outstanding Teacher Award because of just how important they really are to our students.
And to be able to recognize them. I think teachers are not recognized enough in our society. whether it be music, whether it be math or science, the influence that they have on our students, the influence that most of the time students are in their presence longer than they are with their family members during the week. And they have a great deal of impact.
True.
And we need to appreciate that. We need to appreciate the fact that even though a lot of people don't want to admit it, they are almost, you know, they allow the adults, the parents, to be able to go out and do what they have to do because they then occupy those children with knowledge constantly and keeping them very, very focused on all of that. And so a big thank you goes out to the teachers in our society of all kinds. I want to read something to you because we have less than 3 minutes left. and I want to say to Sarah, I'm stealing this from you because I believe that I will say this probably not on this program, but on other programs that I have. Sarah wrote at the end of, and there's much that I could keep on talking about with these two people, but we're at the end of the hour now. But I want you to hear what she said about the reason why she joined the board of the Friends of Music and continues to support its efforts. It's that, she says, I believe music is a lifetime experience. There's always something new to discover. I would like all children to have music in their lives. Not everyone will have the talent and interest to become a virtuoso, but that doesn't matter. No child should live in a music desert. That's a desolate, barren life.
Wow.
That's absolutely fabulous, Sarah. It's something that I shall steal from you, giving you credit.
You're welcome.
Thank you. But
I'm going to have to get that from her, too.
Really, I think it capitalizes what all of us think about when the reason why we join an organization that supports our young people, no matter what it is, whether it's music, whether it's dance, acting, visual arts, science, whether STEM becomes STEAM, thank goodness, because we need to put the arts with it. But all of those very important subjects that our students get, we want to support them. And in this time of this pandemic where students, you know, they are falling short of getting the attention that they should have because we have a focus on trying to stay alive. We want them to know that they're very, very, they're very important to us. They sustain our human capacity. And one of the things that we want them to have is to have arts in their life. And with that said, I have to tell you now that I'm going to have to close us down. I told you that it does go quickly.
Yes. Thank you, Lenny.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you so much.
You know, it's been my pleasure to be a part of this organization. It's been my pleasure to know you all. And now I know you all a little better. And that can be dangerous. I'm not going to forget what I know about you all. It's absolutely fabulous. I think your devotion and passion have influenced me and made me proud to be a part of this group. And I thank you very much for taking your time out to share with us some of your experiences and some of the things that you have learned about it. And I hope, again, that people listening to this, we only have 90 seconds left, will come and explore and come and join us because that will be great. Now, I will, if you both need it, we will be doing a little Zoom so people can see us talk to one another. And if you need it, I will send you an invitation right now when I shut this down. So give me a few minutes and you'll get that in the mail if you don't already have it. And next week I will have a wonderful friend of mine that I met in Los Angeles, a wonderful actress has appeared in movies and films, Jamie Rose. And she was on Falcon Crest, one of those nighttime series. and we did a play together in Los Angeles, and she's going to talk about now where she is in the arts. So I thank you, everyone, for joining us. You two, I will see you in a very few minutes.
Thank you, Lenny.
And I will send you those invitations, and thank you so very much, everyone, for listening to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser today, and please come back and listen to us more every week. Bye-bye now.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something.